Welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, recipes, nature, sustainability, interconnectedness, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sitarani Palomar.
We're taking our time in this week's episode for a cup of calm in a busy world. It's time for tea. We'll be traveling through the wonderful and breathtaking world of tea today with our guide, Emmabet Bellingham, a woman who truly embodies tea, and we'll hear about the intricacy of finding, selecting, blending, and serving one of the oldest brews known to mankind.
Yeah, you know, tea for me is a relatively new experience. I didn't grow up with it. When I did finally have a caffeinated beverage, it was coffee. And even herb teas wasn't familiar to me until I got into the natural foods industry, you know, 30 years ago. But I find that tea brings me a completely different feeling than a cup of coffee or a cold beer or a cup of lemonade or anything like that. All those drinks that I was very familiar with. And a cup of tea actually makes me stop, because I drink tea every day now. And a cup of tea actually makes me stop and pay attention to what's going on for that few minutes and just changes my focus in the day. It's just a really transformative experience for me.
Yeah, Mark, I also grew up a coffee woman. And so it wasn't until I got into the world of holistic health, and particularly when I was at Bowman College, that I learned about the health benefits of teas and tisanes, and we'll learn about what the difference is between those two things today. But what I'm really excited to share in this episode is a better understanding of the world of tea from the perspective of therapeutic use.
And I thought tisane was just, that was what was on the stove.
Tisane.
What about you? Yes.
Well, I grew up in Hamburg, and Hamburg is the second largest harbor in Europe after Rotterdam in Holland. And so there's an entire area, many, many square miles of harbor area where the tea came from all parts of the world and then was distributed throughout Germany and throughout Europe, all the way into Scandinavia, even Russia. Everything landed, if it was not brought in through the Silk Road or through Mongolia, directly into Hamburg and distributed there. So I actually grew up a tea drinker, even though I had no idea really what I was doing. But I remember getting a tea set, like little terracotta pots, at the age of 10 or 11 or 12. And I had, you know, four or five different varieties of tea. And I can't wait to explore if I was really advanced at that point or what I was actually doing looking back 30 years. But yes, Hamburg is the tea contour of Europe, tea and coffee. So this will be wonderful. I'm looking forward to this hour with our guest, Emmabet Bellingham.
Well, and it's too bad that we're not on TV, because if people would have seen your face there, you looked like a 10-year-old boy who just opened a present with a teapot in front of him. You were just telling that story.
I'm glad they didn't.
But first, here's the green headlines with Jen Lloyd.
Thank you, Mark. U.S. reaches $2 million settlement to further clean up toxic dump site. The EPA announced last month that a $2 million settlement has been reached with 290 small parties responsible for more than 5 billion pounds of hazardous waste in Santa Barbara County. The Casmalia Resources Superfund site, located 10 miles southwest of Santa Maria, California, is a former hazardous waste disposal facility where 10,000 generators disposed of their toxic substances. The settlement with the EPA requires all 290 parties to pay their fair share of costs to clean up the site and further relieves them of liability for waste sent to the facility between 1973 and 1989. BP suspended from new federal contracts. In other EPA news, they announced that the U.S. government has banned BP Oil and Gas Company from new federal contracts. The suspension cites BP's lack of business integrity for the decision and follows BP's November 15th agreement to plead guilty to criminal misconduct following their 2010 oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. The agreement is accompanied by a settlement of $4.5 billion in penalties and $1.26 billion in criminal fines. The EPA says the ban will continue until BP can demonstrate their ability to meet federal business standards. Peru passes ban on GMOs. Peruvian Congress recently approved a 10-year ban on importing and growing genetically modified organisms. The measure applied to seeds, livestock, and fish, with a $14 million fine for violators of the law. Peru's president, Ollanta Humala, believes the ban will protect Peru's biodiversity and rich variety of native plant species. And Sierra Leone Genius creates generators from scraps. Kelvin Doe, a 15-year-old self-taught engineer from West Africa, recently became the youngest person in history invited to the Visiting Practitioners Program at MIT after being recognized for his brilliant ability to build batteries, generators, and transmitters all from scraps he found in the trash. Doe has built a home FM radio station and even batteries used to light homes in his neighborhood. Of his invitation to MIT, Doe has stated that he hopes to develop his skills at the world-renowned research university and return to his hometown in Sierra Leone in order to improve the quality of life in West Africa. And those are the green headlines. Back to you, Helga.
Thank you, Jen. That's Jen Lloyd for that weekly update of what's going on in the world of green living and sustainability. BP, $4.6 billion settlement, $2.something billion in criminal fines. We just had a news piece a couple of weeks ago that an Argentine judge was holding the Chevron assets in that country, $19 billion. Company are being held accountable every week, it seems. And that comes just on the heels of the news piece that Kaiser Permanente came out to officially recommend not to eat GMO foods last week. And now we have Peru passing a ban on the cultivation of GMOs. Wow, we did lose the labeling battle here in at the last election in California, making mandatory labeling a requirement for all foods that contain genetic engineering. But it seems like the genetic engineering food discussion is reaching a completely new world, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, I think out of each disappointment often comes some good. And, I think the good coming out of there is that I think people and countries and counties and cities and states are going to take things that matters into their own hands because that's just the way we need to take this on.
Well, and I think that that's the way trends work, right? Mm-hmm. And just as you're saying, Helga, we had a news piece about Chevron the other week, and now we have a news piece about BP. And we had a news piece about people doing sticker bombing of this product contains GMOs and about the Washington County that came up with their own regulations. So, and now we have what's going on with Peru, and we have, of course, what's going on with Kaiser. So these things, they are trends. And I think the trend is happening because people are finally speaking up. That's what's encouraging other people to find the whatever braveness or bravado it takes to say, we're going to do things differently. We're going to hold you accountable, or we're going to set our own rules.
Yes, and if you haven't seen that news piece yet or didn't listen to last week's episode, Kaiser Permanente in a newsletter recommended to all its 8.9 million members, Kaiser Permanente being the largest healthcare provider in the country and perhaps in the world, to avoid GMOs because of health possible health consequences, and gave an entire list of recommendation of how to avoid them, and that's Kaiser. That those things will, create a shift in the movement, of course. And you're right, Mark. It's democracy taking place. If the federal government or the state government is not ready to implement mandatory labeling on that level, then people, if it's important enough, will take action and. Shift is happening every week. Wonderful. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And today we are talking about tea, the colorful and intricate word of one of the oldest drinks in history. Our topic this week is Time for Tea, a Cup of Calm in a Busy World. Today and only here on An Organic Conversation. That and more when we come back. Stay tuned.
My baby watches me in the darkness of the window. I can hardly get to sleep. Wish for the hour that the night time soon shall pass, and the morning do bring us to a day our souls can last.
And we're back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Our topic today is time for tea, a cup of calm in a busy world. There's something magical about tea. You take a few leaves, pour hot water over them, let them steep. It seems simple, and yet something else is occurring in the process. Somehow, it slows down the world around us, and it slows down the world inside of us as well. For thousands of years, tea has been at the center of trade, culture, history, and health. Today, we are diving into this world of travel to foreign places, selecting, blending, and serving tea varieties and their individual character, and we'll hear about the intricacies and beauty of the world of tea. Time for tea, a cup of calm in a busy world is our topic today, and with us here in the studio is the woman who truly embodies this world of tea and has done so for most of her life, Amabet Bellingham. Amabet, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Amabet, it's so good to have you on. And
you
have such a rich background and even a rich present of traveling and just getting into this world and incorporating it into yours. So before we get into how you do your selecting, your blending, and your selling of artisan teas, can you tell us how you got into this? What about your heritage and your childhood influences the work that you do today?
Yes. Well, tea. Tea for me is my passion. Growing up, one of my favorite things to do was to go pick up tea leaves and herbs. Well, actually, not tea leaves, mostly herbs, from my mother's botanical garden, and blend them and play around with them and drink them and serve it to my friends.
At what age did you start doing that?
Very young. Possibly, I want to say, 6, 7.
Wow.
Yes.
And this was not in this country.
No, yes. This is in Ethiopia. Yes. And throughout my life, I continue to play with tea and blend tea for home use.
So it really started as a playful thing for you first. Instead of playing with, you know, dolls or whatever, you used the garden as your inspiration. And what's the guidance? What was the guidance? What's the frame in which you just went out and found out what tasted well and what didn't? Or
no.
Did your mom give you a little bit of advice?
Yes. back home, a lot of people use fresh herbs to make tea. It's a natural process.
Part of the culture.
Yes, part of the culture. And blending is maybe my part of it. I enjoyed very much blending since young age. And also experiment with all different taste flavors at that.
And what kind of things were in your botanical garden when you were growing up that you could go out and pick and go, oh, I think maybe this and this might go well together?
Yes. Peppermint is a very, or spearmint, chamomile, thyme, sage, rosemary. Some of it used for cooking also for tea. These are mostly the common ones.
And all very distinct flavors.
Very
so,
much so
some might go with each other and some might
not.
And some
so that's
won't.
Where you find out. Some is very overwhelming in maybe aroma. Some is overwhelming in flavor. So you balance it.
And it's interesting. We had a great show on spices a few months back. Do we remember which month that was?
It was in the actually, it was last year.
Oh,
it was
last
a year,
year
ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think maybe last
summer. Last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, June or something.
And you were just mentioning, you know, herbs and spices. When it comes to spices, cardamom, all those are basically the ingredients of chai, right?
Yes.
As an herbal tea. So. It's not a leaf-based tea. It's an herbal tea. And you can, the world of spices and the world of tea are very closely associated with each other when we talk about non-tea leaf teas, such as herbal teas or spice teas.
Yes.
Pepper being a key ingredient in chai.
Yes. So basically, when we talk about chai, you could make your base either from black tea or herbal tea or tisan, such as rooibos. Or you could make even shot of mint. So there's no limit to it.
Yes, and that kind of starts the categorization of the world of tea. They are two basic, and they interact a little bit, but they are two basic departments, if you want to, or worlds. One is leaf tea, which is really tea from a plant. And I learned before the show that it all comes from one single bush or tree.
Camellia sensis.
Yes. So this is amazing to me. Camellia sensis is the one tea leaf tea that all leaf-based teas are coming from.
Black, and, green, yes, oolong, pu'er, everything comes from
everything
this
that is
plant.
Not an herbal tea comes from that one Camellia sensis tea leaf. And the way it's fermented or toasted afterwards kind of defines the direction, and the way, of course, the final mix is blended defines the final tea.
But exactly.
The leaf that's used in all leaf-based teas is that plant, Camellia sensis.
Exactly. And also, this leaf contains polyphenols, which gives tea its antioxidant properties, which is why it's so used heavily for its supports many health benefits, such as prevent blood clotting, lower cholesterol levels, help the body to fight harmful free radicals, help stimulate the immune system, help in weight loss.
Yeah, well, the weight loss is an interesting thing because people have been really into green tea lately as a way to lose weight. And is that particularly a green tea benefit, or because all of these come from Camellia sensis, is it something that you're getting from black teas also?
Yes, you could get from black tea as well, but the green tea benefit is more so because of the way it's processed. It's steamed and dried and packaged immediately.
Yes.
The black tea has much more involved process. So the properties get reduced a little
diminished.
Bit.
Diminished. Oh, yes. I see. Because it's aged, right? Aged and fermented, the black tea usually.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
And we want to hear about how Camellia sensis, the mother of all teas, the basis of all leaf-based teas, when we don't look at herbal teas, all coming from Camellia sensis, is post-harvest processed to then create the world of interesting mixes and of interesting names and blends. In just a minute, you're listening to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Helber.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And actually, speaking of Camellia sensis as that foundation for our leaf-based teas, it's a bush if it's trimmed that way, if it's grown that way. But you remember having that tea plant grow into almost a tree size.
Oh, yes? Definitely. There are tea trees, ancient tea trees they're called, and one of our tea, actually, black tea, is from 1500 years old tree, Yunnan tree in
that
Yunnan
so
province in China.
Because usually when you see photos of tea plantages.
I don't know what they're
of tea
called,
fields,
farms.
You have, they're all like shoulder high and, you know, small leaves.
Yes,
and you see
bushes.
Lots of pickers in the field,
yes.
Mostly hillsides.
Yes.
What is the full grown Camellia sensis tree look like?
The trees, they're all different sizes, but mostly I'd say about 5 to 6, 7 feet or even higher. There's all different species.
Like that 1500-year-old tree where you still get tea from.
Yes, that's pretty high. That when they harvest that tea, they have to climb up on the tree to harvest the tree.
They're so literally climbing the branches and picking the leaves?
Yes, exactly. So they're all different sizes as far as the trees themselves, depending on the species.
We're speaking with Emmabet Bellingham, the founder of Desta, Desta Epicures Guild, about this hour of tea, time for tea, a cup of calm in a busy world. This is an organic conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And we want to learn about what is being done to Camellia sensis, to that basic leaf that all leaf-based teas come from in the post-harvest part, because that really is the key to unlocking the world of flavor and names and varieties. That and more when we come back. Stay tuned.
Thank you. friend. And now it's time to build from the bottom of the pier right to the top. Don't hold back. Packing my bags and getting the academy.
Are you a chef, have a catering business, or planning a party, or simply just love organic produce? If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, walk right in to Earl's Organic Produce. Anyone can buy directly from us at wholesale prices. You don't have to be a natural food store to enjoy the freshest and most delicious organic produce. We are located on the San Francisco Produce Market at 2101 Gerald Avenue. We look forward to seeing you.
Walk-in hours are Monday through Friday throughout the night from 10 p.m. to 10 a.m. Minimum purchase is one box or flat, cash or checks only. For more information, visit earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
At Testa Epicure Guild, we provide tea and coffee from the regions of the world known to produce the finest of their kind. Always certified organic and fair trade, we stand for exceptional taste and highest quality. Every cup of our tea and coffee is connected to the soil and the people working the land. We have searched the world for the best ingredient and invite you to enjoy Desta tea and coffee. Find Desta at your natural food store or online at desta.com. That is D-E-S-T-A.com.
The Farmer Veteran Coalition is a nonprofit organization dedicated to provide veterans with resources, education, and technical assistance to prepare them to become successful farmers. After serving their country, many veterans are interested in working with the land but do not have a background in farming or ranching. Help the Farmer Veteran Coalition to assist veterans in starting a new career in sustainable agriculture. For more information, please visit farmvetco.org. That's farmvetco.org.
We're back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helga Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And with us today is a woman who truly embodies the world of tea, Emmabet Bellingham, who started Desta Epicures Guild, a partner in this show in our episode this week, Time for Tea, A Cup of Calm in a Busy World. Emmabet, before the break, we talked about that literally all leaf-based teas, and we can talk about what that exactly means, but every leaf-based tea, if it's not an herbal tea, comes from one single plant in this world, Camellia sinensis, that is grown in different parts of the planet, of course, from India to Africa to
Asia, different parts of Asia, China, Taiwan.
So the post-harvest handling, what happens to the tea afterwards, after it's being harvested, defines what it is, a green tea, a white tea, a black tea. Can you tell us what some of those methods are to make it then what we know it to be when we buy it?
Okay, the process is very intricate, so I'll try to make it short.
Yeah, okay.
But just to briefly discuss it, green tea is made from steamed leaves and dried and packaged. Black and oolong tea made from dried and fermented leaves. White tea is uncured or unfermented. So basically, it's harvested, dried quickly before it's oxidized and packaged. Pu'er tea is a very unique tea. It goes through a quite intricate process. But basically, it's fermented, aged, and then packaged.
And really, like, the comparison to wine comes up where, yes, you have grapes. In this case, there's only one grape variety, with this one tea variety, but it's the work of the winemaker, in this case, directly after the harvest, that can ferment it, dry it well or not. I'm sure the process is delicate enough that a decent harvest could be destroyed if it's not done right, or it can really bring out the quality and the properties and the flavor of the tea.
Very
in that.
Much so. It's our artisan who's working with the tea leaves. They have done it for centuries. It's a culture, it's a skill has been acquired from ages to ages.
And then somebody like you with your experience comes in and uses those ingredients and blends them into specialty blends.
Exactly.
And we want to talk about that too. But
Well, so what makes for the different qualities of teas? I mean, I see hundreds of packages of green tea on the shelf. I go into a coffee shop that might have bulk tea. I go into a shop that has bags. I mean, what makes for better teas than other teas?
Again, it's green tea, even though it comes from Camellia sinensis, there's all different process to reach to a different flavor. So some green tea are pan roasted.
Oh, like in a frying pan or something?
It's a big pan.
Okay.
It's
like a wok tile.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And
and
dried flat. That would be dragon well.
Okay.
Sencha, it's steamed and dried. So there's all different kind of green tea. So it's actually what you prefer as a tea drinker. Do you prefer the grassy, the seaweedy taste like sencha, or do you like the little bit toasty, kind of wheat grassy kind of taste?
Quality mark is right. I mean, even... It's not just variety there. The quality seems to drastically vary
quality,
in the world.
Definitely.
Is that based on the cultivation, on the soil, on the growing region?
All of it.
Or is
all
it the post-harvest handling and how well it's done and
yes,
all of it?
All of it. The region, the best soil, climate, right? And then, of course, how it's harvested. And at that point, also the season matters. And also once it's harvested, how you process it.
Also, there are vintage years in tea where you know 92 was exceptional. And
exactly.
You can still, really.
Oh, very much so.
That's so fascinating.
Wow.
When you buy a tea bag, it's usually a powder in there, right? It's usually just like some powdered tea.
Yeah, crushed.
There.
Yeah.
When I buy a tea bag.
And yet, when we were tasting at your shop this morning, we went in there and had this amazing tasting, all of yours were these leaves, and every single tea looked completely different. You know,
yes.
There was a green tea that had these beautiful kind of brownish yellow leaves or brownish green leaves, and there were some that looked more twiggy.
The white ones that curl.
Yes. And so there's different qualities of each tea then too, correct?
For sure. And also, we don't even compare crushed or powdered tea to whole leaf tea. Whole leaf tea is, it shows the quality of the leaf because it's after harvested and processed, you also sell it as a whole leaf. And as you're brewing your tea, you could see as it expand and unfurled and you smell it, you see the beauty and you also taste the flavor. It's much different than the one that's powdered and packaged.
Which is what you do, right? We're speaking with Emmabet Bellingham, really an expert in tea from her early childhood on, and also the founder of Desta Epicures Guild, offering loose leaf teas that are of exceptional quality. And when you travel the world, you look at all those properties, right? You look at the color of the leaf, how it behaves once it's brewed, the color of the final cup, of course, the flavor. But beyond the flavor, it's really how it behaves, how it looks, the coloring, what it will do if it's after it's steeped for 1 minute versus 3 minutes. You look at every single
yes.
thing on the leaf and on the final tea that you buy before you even take it to blend it.
Yes. You go through tests, and then you see the liquor that's producing the tea.
What's the liquor?
The tea itself.
Once it's steeped.
The liquid. Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Which is called liquor for tea.
Brewing.
And what the color saturation is, and
yes, the clarity of it. You'll see if it's a little muddy or it's clear. It's amber or is it gold? And there's all different standard for the color itself as well
yes.
as as well as the taste.
There's a great quote that I found in one of the books at your store. It says, the Western world has enjoyed tea for nearly four centuries, often with little or no regard to the families who pick the leaves for our daily cup of tea. And I would add to that, and people like you who spent their lives selecting, traveling the world and selecting the best loose leaf tea to bring us this kind of experience. That's Emmabet Bellingham. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helber.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And we do want to hear a bit more about the blending. And I know, Sita, how eager you are to talk about the health properties. But I think it is time, Mark. It's time for the weekly update of what's going on in the world of produce. And it's our very own Mark Mulcahy with What's in Season.
Well, we are talking about, did you see the movie Lost in Translation?
Yes.
Well, this is Lost in Transition. And that's where the market is right now. It's in transition. And that's why I got Earl on the line.
So clever.
Yeah. I got Earl Herrick from Earl's Organic Produce, the voice of the market from San Francisco. Earl, we are in transition, aren't we?
Oh, boy, I can barely keep my feet. No time to battle. No. Winter is here. I mean, solstice is quickly approaching. And,
yeah, a couple
and,
weeks.
You know, really, yeah, and most of the local produce is down to, you know, greens and root crops. So, you know, any area that receives a hard freeze where snow can linger is out of production.
Mm-hmm.
So, most of the food is going to be coming from southern regions. It really becomes the nation's garden with limited productions from all. You know, what we're going to see is limited production from the states that are not frozen over. So we're talking about the Gulf states, you know, Texas, Arizona, and, of course, the California desert, Coachella and Imperial Valley, and most of it coming from those deserts and different portions of Mexico.
Sure, sure.
Because in the East Coast, you're going to get some Florida production, and you might even get a little bit out of Texas, but it's 80 degrees in Mexico and in the California desert, so they're producing all those summer crops right now.
Uh-huh. And what do you mean? What about transition? Yeah. What do you mean by that? I mean, what kind of products in the store are we looking at that are transitioning or have transitioned down to the southern part of the United States?
We're thinking summer squash, beans, bell peppers, cucumbers, eggplant, tomatoes, and melons.
What about lettuce? Would that be down there too?
Lettuce will gradually get there. It does get production out of the coast around Santa Barbara still, if the weather's right. So there's not as much summer lettuce because actually it's too hot down there.
Right.
You're mostly going to get production out of the coast.
So all those summer crops that you're used to buying at the store have all transitioned down, and that's what's going to be in your produce department if you want those types of things.
Exactly. And, of course, when winter comes, eventually a freeze comes. And that's not happened yet, but you can count on it almost any part of the year in January, February. When that happens, there's always a spike. But that hasn't happened yet, and the biggest thing that's going on right now is rain, and that's always a little bit of challenge with citrus.
And so what's happening there?
Well, California, a week or so ago had some major rains. We got like 8 and 10 and 12. I heard the Santa Cruz Mountains got 17 inches of rain over
a
weekend.
Goodness. Wow.
Yeah, we got that kind of rain up where we were too.
Yeah, so with that, you can't go out and harvest citrus, and you have to wait a couple of days for it to dry out. So in that time, product supply goes down. Prices can sometimes go up. What we're seeing this year, though, is prices have stabilized. So if you're seeing, you're probably going to see like a $2.99 rather than dipping down to a $1.99.
For citrus, for like satsumas or something like that?
Yeah, particularly satsumas. The rest of the citrus is, we'll have to see. It's a little hard to tell yet what's going to happen. If it rains a lot, you can expect prices to go up, and watch out for quality. Ask for samples, and also don't buy too much because it won't hold as well if it's been waterlogged.
Earl, that's so interesting. I would expect the market to have enough volume floating around, or even at the stores, stored in the cooler in the back or so, that if there's a 2-day rain and the picker cannot go into the field and harvest citrus, that that doesn't have a direct effect on price. But you're saying you, as the distributor of all organic produce, in this case, you see right away if there's no supply for 2 days coming in because only half of your growers were able to go into the field, that immediately affects the price.
Yeah, now it may not affect the price, you know, that day or even that week, but what it does is that it stabilizes it because generally when citrus comes, it starts getting cheaper.
Sure.
I mean, every week it gets a little cheaper.
And it might not.
But I think, yeah, it probably won't. It probably will stabilize, but that's what happens when it rains. It stabilizes, and if it's a huge rain or a freeze, that's when it's going to go up. But
great.
Those things
gotcha.
Move fairly quickly. Sometimes the retailer feels them. Sometimes they don't. One of the interesting transitions that happens every year is to items that in the last 20 years have become real popular, and that's all the bagged salads and the specialty greens that you may see in the stores.
The number one selling organic item.
There you go. The production area is generally Watsonville and Salinas, and they make that transition. They close that down right around Thanksgiving when you get either a cold hit or a lot of rain and go down to Yuma. And invariably, they do it over a weekend. And invariably, there's a hiccup. But this year, the transition happened pretty well, and I don't think anybody really noticed. But it can be years where they'll go down to Yuma, and Yuma can have a cold spell, and all of a sudden, production
sure.
dries way up.
Oh, so fascinating.
Yeah,
look
well...
Look at the weather.
Yes.
Look at the weather and buy accordingly.
Yes.
Great
that's
advice.
Great. Great,
yeah.
great advice, Cheryl. Thank you so much. We will, of course, have you on again next week, and we won't be in as much transition then. So thanks.
Thank you, Earl. Thank you.
Thanks, Earl.
Man, his view on, you know, his knowledge and view on what's going on directly daily on the ground is just fascinating.
Well, it's fascinating. He has to have it. And actually a good produce buyer on the retail level. Is doing that exact same thing too. So just a couple quick tips for me, since we were mostly talking about transition, is if you get your lettuce and your greens and stuff home, just a quick tip is to make sure that you don't wash it until you're ready to eat it, because the wet greens, when they go into the fridge, help them to break down quicker. So that's a quick tip. And if you're looking for berries and notice that the price has skyrocketed because most of your berries are out of season now, consider cranberries, because they are the highest antioxidant fruit out there. Even higher than blueberries. And they are great in muffins. They're great in breads. They have a great sweet tart flavor. And you can also juice them. And if you want to know how to dry your own cranberries at home, next week look at my blog and I'll have a recipe for drying your own cranberries at home.
Mark,
teaser.
So exciting.
So good. We will. Thank you, Mark. That's the weekly update of what's going on in the world of produce, what's in season. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
And Earl was letting us know, too, that we didn't get a chance to talk about what is in season during this transition time, specifically what you can get locally, things like root vegetables, parsnip, winter, squash, onions, as well as greens, celery, and parsley. Still local, in season, and abundant.
Wonderful. Thank you, Sita. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And here in the studio with us is Emmabet Bellingham, the founder of Desta Epicures Guild, offering the finest teas and coffees from the places of the world known to produce, actually, the finest of their kind. And we talked about tea, loose leaf tea, coming from Camellia sensis, this one plant. We talked about what is happening in the post-harvest handling, the fermentation, the aging, the toasting of the tea to make it the varieties that we are known to. That is all leaf-based tea. There is also the world of herbal teas that are created either by using herbs or spices or a blend of leaf teas and herbs and spices. Emmabet, what are a couple of varieties that people know about that we see in the store that are either a blend of both or that are herb teas?
The very common teas that comes to mind would be a chamomile blend, which is very calming, relaxing. Mint blends also are other popular teas.
During the break, you mentioned rooibos. What's rooibos tea? Really?
Rooibos tea comes from a plant in South Africa. It is full of antioxidants and minerals, and it has this very mild, like almost like honeysuckle kind of flavor.
So that's not a leaf-based tree. It's considered a bush.
It has no caffeine. It's a bush. It's herb, and it's a very delicate herb.
When do you mix herbs and spices with leaf-based teas? I mean, is a good example chai, or is chai always herbal only?
Chai could be mixed with either black tea.
Oh yeah, you mentioned that earlier.
Or with herbs. So chai usually is more than, let's say, 3-4 spices blended with herbs or tea leaves.
And it's funny that every cup of tea has a real therapeutic property.
Sita, I think chai is a really good example of that because, like you said, Amabet, chai has cardamom, oftentimes cinnamon, fennel, clove. These are spices that we know to have tremendous therapeutic benefits, whether it calms cramps or it calms the nervous system. So can you make these blends, right? And I know when we spoke before, actually somebody who works with you who said this really beautiful thing that Amabet encourages the flavors out of tea, and every time she makes a tea, she asks herself, what do I want to accomplish with this tea? And how do I blend the things that will give it health properties? So that's really one of your specialties when it comes to blending. So can you tell us a little bit about how you bring these therapeutic qualities into this beverage?
Yes. Blending is an art. Skill is required, but it goes beyond skill because it's you have to enjoy it. You have to put yourself in this space where you're surrounded with bountiful of herbs, spices, flower, berries. It's just a beautiful grounding art. Or when you're creating blend. So I take in consideration quality, strength, depth, flavor, color, beauty, and health benefits of each ingredient before I blend. So I would say if I blend a couple of these herbs, what am I going to get? Is it just flavor? No, it's all of it. You have I imagine what each ingredient will bring to the sensory. So once I blend herbal blend or even tea blend, then it goes through countless of experiment and tasting and adjusting.
You must be tasting and sipping every step along the way, because otherwise, if you don't, you don't know. If you skip two steps and you taste it, then you don't know which step you took that created flavor X. And if you find it a little bit too stimulating, you would need to track back. So that doesn't work. So you have to, every time you change something, every time you change the mixture or add something to it, you have to stop, taste it, brew it, consider it, and then reimagine the world of what could be added or not.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
How long does it take to blend a good blend?
It could take a few months. I have a tea that I've been working on now the last 8 months. Back and forth going at it, and then I'm waiting just for the right time, right season to release it.
Did you say 8 months?
It could. I have. Months. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Just for our listeners, Amabet sounds like a 30-year-old, but she's actually 200.
Yes.
That is fascinating. And you mentioned the skill set. There are wine schools, and they're actually tea schools, which I didn't know. But you're saying yes, you got to have that knowledge, and really, you know, skill of the theory behind it, but ultimately, since every variety and every season and every region creates kind of a different product, you at the end are the catalyst for all of it.
Yes.
And before the show, you were saying, which I find the most fascinating, that we talk a lot about local food here on the show and for herbs and spices that might be possible, but for loose leaf based teas, they're coming from all parts of the rest of the world that is not in the United States or even close. So you were saying that you bring even the experience of you traveling there and selecting it, the culture of where you were, the conversations you had with that seller, the family that has been on the land for maybe 20 generations. You bring all of that into your mixes to exactly. make sure that when we experience it, aware or not, conscious or not, we dive into that world and it becomes us through your tea.
Yes.
Which makes, I think, your tea one of the most important peace missions that we have, bringing the culture in. I always keep saying if it's not available local, there's still a way of doing it right. And we want to talk about your philosophy and mission with Desta, because it's much more than bringing excellent tea and coffee to the world. You have a deeper commitment to this planet and its inhabitants, and we'll talk about this in 1 second. This is Amabet Bellingham of Desta Epicures Guild. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulgay.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And we'll be right back with more. Stay tuned.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Are you interested in making healthy food your profession? Bowman College is a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. Their professional training programs prepare individuals for successful careers as nutrition consultants and natural chefs. Study at one of 4 locations in California and Colorado, or learn from home in a self-paced mentor distance learning program. Find out more about their classes on holistic nutrition and culinary arts at bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N college.org.
Do you feel run down, stressed, overweight, or overloaded? Urban Remedy is a delicious 100% organic juice cleansing program designed to jumpstart your body's natural healing and cleansing abilities. This delicious juice feast, created by leading acupuncturist Nika Pasquale, is rich in vital nutrients, minerals, and enzymes, providing you with all the nutritional nourishment you need to thrive. Delivered directly to your doorstep. Urban Remedy, a convenient way to boost your energy and balance your body. Place your order today at urbanremedy.com. That's urbanremedy.com.
The Farmer Veteran Coalition is a nonprofit organization dedicated to provide veterans with resources, education, and technical assistance to prepare them to become successful farmers. After serving their country, many veterans are interested in working with the land but do not have a background in farming or ranching. Help the Farmer Veteran Coalition to assist veterans in starting a new career in sustainable agriculture. For more information, please visit farmvetco.org. That's farmvetco.org.
And welcome back to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Our topic today is time for tea, a cup of calm in a busy world. We have a wonderful in-studio guest here with us who founded Desta Epicures Guild, Amabet Bellingham, who since childhood has made it her mission to blend and find the best quality teas and coffees now through her company, Desta Epicures Guild. And we want to hear the commitment to the planet and the earth that goes far beyond bringing us these wonderful products that you have with Desta, Amabet. But before We continue the interview. Here's our very own chef Sita, Sita Rani Paloma, with her holistic bite.
Thank you, Helga. Well, today I want to talk about tea soup. Yeah, that's right. You heard me correctly. Tea soup. And this concept was really foreign to me until I saw it on a menu at a restaurant. But I did some research, and this is a Japanese dish that makes clever use of leftovers, and they've been doing it for centuries. And it makes perfect sense to me now that I think about it. When you make soup, you use stock. And when stock is made classically, it has a tremendous amount of therapeutic benefit, as does tea. It's, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about how tea is rich in antioxidants. And when you blend it with different herbs and roots, like burdock root, which is incredibly tonifying and helps to detox the liver, you can put all of these properties into your meal. And so your tea will substitute all or maybe just part of your broth, but you don't want to cook with the tea the way that you would cook with the broth. The way that you make tea soup is actually quite simple. You prepare your vegetables separately. So whether you're using leftover vegetables or you're doing a quick steam on peas and broccoli and carrots and shiitake mushrooms, you do all of that separately, right? So you have some vegetables and even some sea vegetables like nori or wakame, some rice maybe, some tofu, all very alkalizing ingredients. And then you pour your brewed tea over top of that. And you want to use a tea that goes really well with savory ingredients. So a lot of people will do this with green tea. You can also do it with a tisane, which is actually has no tea leaf in it, but it's a blend of herbs and spices. So something like a lemongrass ginger would be phenomenal. And then you can garnish with all kinds of pops of flavor. You can do sesame seeds or cilantro. You can do sliced green onions or peanuts. And this beautiful full bowl of vegetables with about 2 cups of your favorite hot tea over it will be so soothing to your nervous system and alkalizing to all of the other sugary, flour-based ingredients you might have eaten through the day. It's also really nice to have a little sauce that you can add to it to kind of amp the flavor as you go. So make something kind of table side, maybe tahini and ginger and orange juice and maybe even some sriracha, something that's really spicy, but it'll give it a little bit more of a pop. But this is a way that you can bring all of those tremendous therapeutic benefits of tea into a very quick and satisfying meal. And that is this week's Holistic Bite.
Wonderful. Thank you, Sita. That's Chef Sita. And as always, the Holistic Bite is brought to you by the natural beauty company Echo Bella, offering a wonderful line of body care products and intelligent cosmetics. And speaking of therapeutic use, which is, I think, the translation of therapy is, or therapeutic use is deeply healing. It's so interesting when you look at tea or when you look at body care in this case, that you can buy a chapstick for chapped lips, and you actually are putting ingredients on yourself that you don't necessarily want.
Well, there are a lot of petroleum-based ingredients in skincare, and that doesn't, I mean, it actually works against you in many ways.
Yes.
So using something that is also using these herbs like lavender or lemon verbena or geranium, whatever they put in it, can oftentimes be a transport mechanism for antioxidants and vitamins and all kinds of healing properties.
Yes, certified organic, of course. And all of Ecobella products are preservative-free, gluten-free, and cruelty-free. Check it out, ecobella.com. Let us know what you think. Again, that's ECCOBELLA, ecobella.com. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And with us is Emmabet Bellingham, the founder and managing director of Desta Epicures Guild, and talking about therapeutic use, deeply healing. Emmabet, your teas, besides the property, or in addition to the property that the tea has for us when we drink it, you heal the land just as much. All your teas are certified organic, fair trade. You source from small family farms that you have known for many years in some instances, always scouting out for new opportunities to get that integrity, to make it a cultural experience. That is Desta Epicures Guild, but you even go further than that. Tell us about your commitment to the planet and what you do in Ethiopia.
Okay. Well, I founded Desta with a philosophy of interconnectedness of all things. So saying that, I searched the world for the finest ingredient grown thoughtfully. That means I choose organic gardens, biodynamic farms, harvesting, wild harvesting, and fair trade. I believe organic and fair trade are value to all, our customers, the people who work the land, and to protect our Earth's ecology.
And DESTA actually encapsulates all that because it means?
Joy.
Joy.
Yes. You can't have joy when you're considering our Earth, the people who work on it, and us. That's joy. That's true.
Yes.
Basically, for example, earlier today we were talking about white tea. Mm-hmm. Silver needle is clipped from the bud of the plant, and that's a very laborious work, and time is not. You're very limited in time. So basically...
because when it buds, and it buds, 2 weeks later, it would not be that tea anymore.
No.
You have
We're talking about 2 to 3 days max.
Wow,
it would be 3 days.
Yes.
So you have to go out there and clip those buds very quickly. And these ladies, mostly ladies, or sometimes could be men too, but out there clipping these very quickly, efficiently, out in the sun. And then here we are here. We're drinking this amazingly delicate tea. So what kind of work goes behind that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's huge. And it's so important that we appreciate the people who work the land and support fair trade so their children could go to school, so they could get health care. So...
Yes, and with coffee, which DESTA also offers, that is more known. I think coffee, chocolate, those products are now in the conscious consumer's mind directly related and linked to fair trade in the best circumstance. With tea is it's such an unknown world. We take it for granted to see 20 different varieties of teas nowadays. And I don't think in detail, I did not know how much work on the field, in the field, harvest, the timing, bringing it in, selecting it, blending it. Really, until it reaches your cup, there's an unbelievable process, maybe unlike many or most other products that you can find out there that goes into it. So being that responsible every step along the way has that effect because so many parts are part of it.
And Emmabet, you also have a nonprofit that donates back to Ethiopia.
Yes. Yes, the World Family. It's a nonprofit that I co-founded. Basically, we support rural communities to be self-sustainable through education, healthcare, and microloan and work creation.
And profits from the sale of your tea and coffee go to your nonprofit.
Yes, it does. Yes.
So literally with every cup, creating a world of joy. That's DESTA Epicure's Guild. Thank you, Emmabet,
for
guiding us through that world. Fascinating. And check it out on our Facebook page, facebook.com/inorganicconversation or DESTA.com for more information. And I know all of your products have like the little brewing instructions on it to do it right. And
temperature and time and also the ingredients and the health benefits. Her Facebook page has got so much great
Thanks
information.
Thanks for joining us today. Wonderful.
And thank you.
And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks so much for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a proud production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer, Kristen Ponger. Studio engineer, Robert Costa. News services, Jen Lloyd. Underwriting production, Mark Van Gelder. Thank you all.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, go to iTunes or inorganicconversation.com.
We host Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sita Rani Palomar.
And we will be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
When you've got no one to tell them to, it's true. I was made for you. I climbed across.